magic of the Sunstone. You're tuned into the Jewel Riders Archive.
Hey, Jewel fans, I'm Chris.
And I'm Ronnie from the Jewel Riders Archive.
We're here today with possibly our most exciting episode in the last, 4 years we've been doing this podcast?
Well, you know, the thing is that I feel like for the longest time we've been talking about something that happened 25 and 30 years ago. And today we're talking about something that actually happened in the year that we're living in.
I can't believe it.
It's like a dream come true.
So we are here, if you hadn't guessed it yet, with the amazing creative team behind the brand new for 2024 Princess Guinevere and the Jewel Riders comic. And let me start introduce them to you. We're here with our amazing editor, Lauren Heitzussen.
Hi.
And our awesome writer, Jordi Belair, who you may know from Wonder Woman, Harley Quinn, Batman, and Buffy.
Hi, thank you.
Our artist, Coy Carrion, from, you may have seen his work in Voltron Legendary Defender or Robotech.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. And we were hoping to have our great colorist with us too, Sarah Davidson, but unfortunately it seems like she cannot make this. So hopefully we'll be able to catch up with her sometime in the future.
I think she might have gotten she got off on the wrong travel tree ring. She was lost in the wild magic. And yes. She didn't take the right exit. That's what it was. You know that wild magic out
there. It's always out there to get you.
Exactly. And then we're also going to give each of you guys a quick little opportunity so that way our listeners kind of know a little bit more about you. So let's go ahead and start off with a friend of the archive, Lauren. So Lauren, if you can start us off, give us a little like elevator speech of your creative work, please.
Yeah, so I've been working in comics since 2015. I've had the opportunity to work on a ton of different very cool projects. Faith at Valiant Entertainment. While I was at Valiant, I did something called the Cat Cosplay Covers in 2016, which I'm still very proud of. It was cats dressed as the Valiant characters. And now I'm the senior editor at Maverick, which is Mad Cave Studios' young adult imprint. We do graphic novels, and it's such a special field to be working in because our stories are longer. We have more opportunity to really dive deep in stories, and comics is where I've always wanted to work. And the fact that I'm getting to do a Princess Guinevere and the Jewel Riders comic is mind-blowing to me every day, and I am super excited that y'all have me on. I've followed you guys for a very, very long time, so this is wonderful.
Ah, dream come true.
That's so sweet. Thank you. And Jordi, how about you? Tell us a little bit more about your creative work.
Well, hello. Thank you for having me. I've been in comics since 2011. Feels like an eternity now. I only started to dabble with writing, I think, maybe 2016, though having always wanted to be a writer, and like novels and things, you know. But before that, I was coloring all the comics. People might know me from things like Vision and Batman and Pretty Deadly. It really is quite an extensive list. I've spent a lot of time trying to get my colors right. And then Lauren came out of the blue, you know, and reached out to me about writing because we've had some history together. And I was just really excited because I'm writing more, I think, for young adult than where my heart is right now. So I'm just happy that after coloring so many, you know, Deadpool spreads of really disgusting, horrible violence, I'm now writing the most wholesome things. And it just makes my heart really happy. So I think, yeah.
Wonderful. I mean, you know, not a lot of people get to transition from gore to unicorns. So
I need that on the future. To unicorn. That's really good.
Oh, the gore to unicorn pipeline.
That's a slogan right there for 2024. And Coy, if you can go ahead and tell us a little bit about your creative work, please.
I am Coy. I'm a freelance artist. I mostly did covers for Voltron and Robotech. This is my first long interior work. So it's kind of exciting and challenging.
It's
straight into the deep end with the whole graphic novel.
I know. So yeah, going from mostly cover work to this is the full, like, interior work, and not even just like a regular monthly comic, a full graphic novel. That is quite a challenge.
And quite the achievement.
Artists famously hate drawing horses, and we've got Koi drawing horses.
Non-stop horses.
Yes.
And here I thought that the male figure was always the hardest thing to draw, or is that just 1930s animation? I guess it's horses. You know, I think that we heard that before. We were also talking, this is a whole other conversation, but it's like we were talking to one of the artists also from the Avalon Web of Magic series, and she also was like, I had to draw so many horses in this particular cover, and it was just horses everywhere.
Yes, you're going to get hit with a unicorn anywhere near this franchise.
Yeah. So. And then let's introduce ourselves, also not just to you, but just as a quick recap for obviously the listeners as well. So I'm going to go ahead and hand over the mic first to my partner, Chris. If you can go ahead and just kind of give us a brief, you know, history of us, and then I'll take it from there.
So we are best friends from fourth grade who...
1995, if you
want to date us. Yes. And we both fell in love with Jewel Riders at that age. And that's really kind of how we became friends. And then it's kind of continued on ever since. In 2015, for the 20th anniversary of Jewel Riders, we had realized we'd amassed quite the collection of artifacts and things. So we decided to put it all up on a website, the Jewel Riders Archive, where we have been basically ever since.
Right. And for me personally, I love marketing. If you don't already know that, I love also tangible memories, meaning the merchandising. So for me, I resonated most with the toys, with the products that were available for the Jewel Riders back in the day. And so here at the Jewel Riders Archive, archiving the toys, archiving the show itself. I did also work on editing the audio for the cartoon series. So when 41 Entertainment was looking to share it on streaming services, they also utilize our assets for that. So it's been such an amazing journey that we've been able to not only preserve the fandom on the JewelRidersArchive.com and on social media, but to have these types of interactions. And the fact that now there is a brand new property, like how we said, like for the longest time, we've been talking about stuff that is happening, you know, 25 years ago. And today we're talking about something that is currently happening in 2024. And so
it's like unbelievably exciting to see a thing that you've been kind of working on that you think is kind of dead media.
You know, unfortunately, you know, how many times do you get a message on social media? Like, I can't believe this was real. I thought I dreamt it up. Like, you know, this was real. I thought this was just something I imagined. So yes, to everyone, this was real. This was, you know, this was something that happened. And I think that this is a great segue also for Lauren to tell us a little bit about your personal history and your love of Jewel Riders and, you know, kind of how that brought you to where you are today.
Yeah, this is really exciting that I get to talk about this. I think I discovered Jewel Riders in a Toys R Us. I have a very clear memory of standing in the VHS aisle at a Toys R Us and holding that first VHS, the Jewel Quest one, and thinking to myself that this is what I always wanted. Because there were bright colors, and I was, you know, like some kids are dinosaur kids. I was a rock kid. I really loved rocks. And so there were bright colors and talking animals and rocks in this. And I was like, my gosh, this is so far up my alley. And I watched that VHS. I fell in love with it. I remember using Spike as a spelling word because I loved Spike the cat. And it's always been one of those properties that I talk about. And it's normally met with, you know, people don't know that they really watch the show. There's not a lot of memories of it. And it's kind of been my, something that I've just been passionate about for almost my whole life. And we quote the pilot a lot in my house. We do the, you're a turkey. You can't fly. Like that for some reason is the thing we say the most. Which.
Well, Jewel is so quotable. I love it.
Yeah. And when the opportunity came up I wrote out a treatment for a graphic novel because, like you said, this show, the target market was girls 6 to 12, and our target readership at Maverick is older. So I wrote out a treatment for it saying, like, this is what I would do. This is where I would take the girls. Like, please let me do this. And it got okayed. And then there was all of this time that I couldn't talk about what I was doing with anyone. Like, because I got to work on the thing that meant the most to me as a kid, and I was not allowed to shout it from the rooftops for what felt like forever.
Oh, no. And actually, just out of curiosity, when did this start? Like, when did conversations about this start?
Oh, goodness, a while ago. I don't know that I could give you an exact date. I would have to dig through my emails, but over a year ago, because the book is so long. It's just been a dream come true. I was always a Tamara fan. I loved that she had Tamara a skirt forever. And I loved her pink hair. And getting to see the girls in a new light has been incredible. And when the cover finally came out, I was sitting on Twitter looking at it. And for a hot second, I forgot that I already knew about it. And I was like, oh my God, look at that. And I was like, wait, hold up, Lauren, you've had that sitting in your inbox for literal months at this point. You are so familiar with you. You know what that is. Cause I went into fan mode immediately. And Jewel Riders was my introduction to other magical girls. I got into Sailor Moon because no one could find me Jewel Riders merch. So my grandmother bought me a Sailor Moon lunchbox. And I remember her explaining, she said, well, no, this is just Jewel Riders, but they live in the city. And which, you know, it was an introduction series to the entire magical girl genre. I want to say that conversations, I wish I could remember when they started. Unfortunately, I don't. But it's been a while, and it was definitely many, many months that I was sitting on this information that I was working on this property, and especially because I could see you guys tweeting things, and I was like, oh, I want to tell them so bad, but I can't.
Well, the reason why I was asking, you know, how long this had been in production was because if you've been following the Jewel Riders archive for a while, back in 2020, we had celebrated the 25th anniversary. And I know that when we were originally having conversations with 41 Entertainment, they were kind of saying like, yeah, like we're planning on possibly like doing 25th anniversary merch and we were doing this and that and everything. Or I don't even know if that was 41 Entertainment. I think that was when they were working with someone else, possibly at the PDAX German DVD production company. But there was this glimmer of hope that something might come out in the future. And so I was just wondering, I was like, oh, was this possibly what he was talking about?
That wasn't us. This was after 2020 that conversations started. It really just was kind of me expressing to the other people at the company, like, wouldn't it be cool if we did this comic? And they all agreed. And it just kind of happened to be fate or kismet or whatever you want to call it, that it's lining up with an anniversary.
Gotcha. Now, this is going to be a question now that we're going to follow with Jordy and also with Coy. But Lauren, when you brought up this topic and talked about Jewel Riders, was there anyone else in the room that was kind of like, oh my gosh, like I used to watch that cartoon, or was it kind of like a new thing?
It was just me, but just
you and the crickets.
But what I thought was interesting is we also are doing the King Arthur and the Knights of Justice comic. Mm-hmm. And I expressed to a coworker, I was like, I've never heard of this. And he said, you're not going to believe it, but I met my first friend because of that show in
Canada. Aww. Look at the power that these cartoons have. That's fantastic. I love it.
Now, Lauren, did 41 Entertainment bring this project to Maverick, or was it the other way around?
We reached out to them to see. It really has been a partnership since day one. We reached out to them and expressed our interest, and they were excited and we were excited, and I like practically had to be peeled off the ceiling when I got the go forward on the project. Like I was over the moon and delighted that they were entrusting me with this property that meant so much to me. Yeah, it's really been a partnership since day one. But we did the I believe we did the initial reach out.
Okay, gotcha. So now we're going to hop over to Jordy and asking the same question about Jewel Riders. So I guess the question is then, had you known about Jewel Riders previous to this assignment?
Well, I have to be honest with y'all. No, I felt very surprised when Lauren first pitched it to me. And I thought this feels so, it felt like honestly like a bit of like a fever dream when I was looking at all the images and things. Because I think I'm right in the generation where I definitely would have had it. Because thanks to your archives as well, Lauren recently showed me like the sleeping bag. And the sleeping bag seemed to like provoke a core memory of like someone in my life having this sleeping bag. I think my eldest sister did. Mm-hmm. And it was just so, it's weird. I feel like the more and more I see images and the more I hear about it, it's like the Mandela effect. It all connects back to some weird part of my childhood. But unfortunately, I also was a rock kid. I was also a tornado kid and I loved Power Rangers. So I was really hard on Kimberly. I'm really sorry. I missed out on all the Guinevere and all the loveliness. And it's not great, but I love it now because I've got this. I would call Lauren a proper historian as well. She's very good. I feel like I genuinely can have, I have a friend like this with Harry Potter as well. He's an amazing writer, Jeremy Lambert, love him. I can ask him any question about Harry Potter and he'll know it. I feel like Lauren's the same exact way. I can ask her literally anything. I don't think she's often had to like run back for too much confirmation. So I feel really safe having such a diehard with me, even though I think I'm loosely aware of the material from when I was young and definitely love magical girls. I'm looking at a Sailor Moon skateboard and a drawing on my wall right now. I'm all Sailor Moon time all the time. I've got a dark lady tattoo. I've got Sailor Moon stickers all over my face. I actually realize I have a Sailor Moon problem. Okay.
Problem.
I feel like that is sort of interchangeable. I think Sailor Moon has a bit more of that violence that me and Lauren have talked a bit about. It's violence without violence, but I think Jewel Riders for the time, obviously, the demo was a bit different. And I think that's what's so exciting about our current iteration of it is this demo is sort of more the Sailor Moon demo, I think. Right, Lauren, wouldn't we agree? It's like kind of more like 8 to, 14.
Yeah, I think we've definitely aged it up. It does feel YA. It was important to all of us to not lose kind of the core qualities of the show as we aged it up. And I think that with Koi's art and Jordy's writing and Sarah's colors, we've really found this aged up mm-hmm. Jewel Riders.
I agree. I think Koi's art, I'm sorry, I don't mean to jump ahead. I am just excited because I love Koi. And I just need to say, I do think that Koi's art brought such like a sophistication to my scripts as well that it really makes it feel like it's a show on top with Sarah's like gorgeous colors. Like when I see Koi's art and the colors come in, I feel like I'm like being transported. I feel like a kid again. I do feel really excited. So I feel like as much as the original material is like wonderful and excellent and really, I think at the time, quite unique, right, at that time for everything that they were trying to do and everything that they were achieving. But me and Lauren have talked so much about sort of like the things that didn't have the chance to be explored and the storylines that kind of got cut short. And so now we're doing that. And with Koi and Sarah, and then again, Lauren has Historian. I just feel like we're making something, I don't know. I'm really excited about it. I just feel like we're making something really cool. I feel like if I had been a kid and I got to see all this again, I would have been really in. All these Sailor Moon things probably would have been Jewel Riders after all. Do you know what I mean? I just needed some more violence. I just needed a little more
violence. You needed violence in there. That's all you needed. Well, I mean, I will say, here at the Archive, we have been privileged to already, have a sneak peek at the comic, and we'll be talking about that later. But I will say, like, yes, the story is different in the sense of, like, the target audience, as you've said, but still in keeping, I think, with that magical side of it. And I wanted to point out, when you were talking about the fact that, like, the sleeping bag jogs a memory, I think that's exactly why I love merchandise. It's because even as a child, if you didn't really know, like, let's say Barbie and the Rockers, you might not have heard the music or you might not have seen the cartoon, but it's like, oh, I knew that doll. I knew that. And I think that that's often what happens with Jewel Riders is that people are like, oh, but I had the merchandise. Like, I had a Guinevere doll or I had those shoes, but yet they might not have been able to put two and two together, but still somehow someone has a memory out there. And that's why I love, you know, throwback toys and things like that.
And it just shows like how I think, dare I say, archival all the material is, because the marketing is successful, obviously, in all the merchandise. But it does come from, I think, the place of being wholesome characters that are not only like a joy to watch have adventures, but they also like look cool. Like they do look really neat. Again, to gas up Koi, like when we saw all of the original Koi drawings, it's great. But then when Koi also did all the transformation poses, it was like, whoa, like starting to have all this, like, of course you're going to remember a sleeping bag like that, like shoes like that. They just look so cool. They look like the most coolest, most powerful magical ladies ever. I want to be
right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's a memory for me.
And you did mention Power Rangers, and I will say I was a Power Rangers kid. I was so Team Kimberly. I mean, I'm always the girl character. That's always who I identify with. So yes, to totally go back to Lauren, you know, it's hashtag Tamara forever. But I did create a new hashtag, but I don't want to spoil anything. But I was like, oh, this is the new Tamara hashtag.
Yes, we read the comic together last night, and I was like, you're gonna have to update your hashtag.
Right. Tamara. I'm gonna have a new hashtag with a proper name in front of Tamara.
A proper noun in front of Tamara, maybe.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Exactly. Great. Awesome.
So, Koi, I kind of wanted to ask you the same thing. Do you have any personal history or memories with Jewel Riders? And what were some of your inspirations and shows that you watched growing up?
My sister was the one who watched the show when we were a kid, and I remember being able to watch a couple of episodes too while waiting for the show that I would want to watch.
Awesome. So it was the filler hour show.
Yes, that's the core memory I have with the Jewel Riders. When Lauren asked me if I'm interested in working on it, of course I said yes, because it's my sister's favorite show.
Well, when I reached out, I remember I put in parentheses, I said it was also called Starla in other markets, and you recognized it immediately off of the other name.
Okay, we died, by the way, at the Starla joke in the comic.
Yes, that was quite clever. Yes. I really wanted you to maintain that name, but oh well, it went with the next name.
We didn't want to, you know, if you remember, you saw what happened. We couldn't use the name Starla.
Right, right. Yes, you want to drag it through the mud. No. I get it.
But so I appreciate that Lauren lets us play like that. It's the best.
Right, right. So, Koi, you were saying that, I mean, you did have a chance to at least see it in your childhood. Was there anything that really stuck out about the show? Like, was it the magic properties? Was it the villainous? Like, was it the pack? Like, was there something that you really remember about it by chance?
I remember the girls and the horse and the transforming girls. Yes. And I think I remember Archie too.
Yes.
Everyone loves Archie. He's so cute.
The jewels, yes.
Yeah, the transformations. I mean, you know, a transformation is a classic magical girl thing that happens. So to see that, or Sailor Moon, or Kimberly, or whoever it is transform, it's the highlight. Oh, and then I guess we could throw out another rare property, Tenko and the Guardians of the Magic, magical girl transformation.
If you want to make another comic.
Right? Talk to Saban. I think Disney owns it now. I don't know. Who knows?
So, Jordy, I wanted to ask kind of, how did you approach this as a writer, you know, looking at something that's almost 30 years old and being like, how do I want to update this for this new audience and still capture kind of the spark of the original?
Well, I have to admit, again, it was quite frightening, quite daunting, because there is so much history. And when Lauren came to me with the offer of this project and I saw Koi's, you know, sketches coming in, I definitely started to have a moment of, I might not be, I'm so worried. Like, am I going to be able to tell an interesting story? But I have Lauren there to hold my hand the whole time. And Lauren really came to me with some core concepts that I know she had in mind. And then I think I was just able to riff with her on kind of my core concepts, even if they were weird and a lot of mine would be more about themes and about how girls grow up and about the things that they're going to be wrestling with uniquely in their own. And I think that's in the magic part is all amazing, and I love all that stuff. But that's everything that I think Lauren's really good about bringing me back into is the actual universe. I'm just kind of there, just playing into all the emotions of the characters and their circumstance. So, yeah, I think kind of like the best way we kind of got started, to be honest, I think we started it from an emotional place, and we got hit really hard with the things we knew we wanted to do with each girl, because they're all having a very unique journey. And hopefully by the time we have told our entire story, you'll see a lot of growth from all of them. So I think that's what appealed to me the most, you know, just writing young ladies trying to figure it out.
it's such a tease when you're saying, oh, we're just starting the story and we've got so much to tell. I'm like, oh my gosh, like how long is this going to run?
I'll
like how many issues is
run
this?
A long time. I'll write it as long as, you know, they'll have us. And I would love to have Koi forever as well, as long as Koi wants to draw, you know, cute girls, but I'm here for it. I think it's wonderful. I think there's so much. There's literally so much. That's the thing too. Like every time I feel like me and Lauren have our chats, we get so excited, and then we have to both like tamper each other back down. Like, okay, let's just we gotta like get it on paper because we have so many ideas. So
right. I don't know. You know, I'll say something about the writing is that I did notice that there was a lot of things that were kind of like, okay, this would have not been in there, you know, in 1995. And one of the things that stuck out for me, and personally, just because I'm so into psychology, it was the every time you talked about validation and you were like, oh, you just need to be validated or something. I was like, oh, that's so like 2020s, like speak. Was there anything that was like, okay, like, was that just because of the target audience, or was it just the changing of the times? Like, was there something that you watched in the original that was kind of like, we don't really want to carry that into the new generation? You know what I mean?
I think that's a really interesting question. And actually, you're right. I forgot to mention at the part of my process, obviously, I sat down and I watched every episode of this is the show, obviously. And then Lauren's like, it's a lot. So you're going to have a lot of questions like binge it all. And I did.
It's true.
A lot to parse there. And I think I've given it maybe 3 watch throughs, and it's really great. But there is a lot there that I think as of the time is, I don't want to use the word dated, but it was just a different time. Contextually, things were just a little bit different. And again, I think there were so many open places that they didn't, maybe because of the time and the constrictions of writing, or again, the demo, they weren't able to fully launch themselves into some of these themes. So when it comes to validation, it is definitely, I think, a modern day kind of contemporary thought, but I think it's this emotional intelligence that's really been taking over the world. And I'm very happy to see it. I want to see more people confronting their feelings as dark and horrible as it can be, because I do think it makes us more empathetic and hopefully kind soul to others. So I think when the girls are talking about any sort of wrangling beast of an emotion, and I think I know who you mean, who gets called out on needing validation. I think it's important. I think it's important for somebody to hear and to see, especially that person, to kind of wonder, wow, is this actually a problem I have? Why do I have this problem? Do I need this problem? Am I cool without validation? I am. Look at my outfit. So
look at my jewel power, obviously.
I want to call out the absolute humanity that Jordy and Koi and Sarah brought to, I'm just going to say it, to Drake. I feel like...
I love Drake.
Same.
Me too. He's my boy.
I feel like when you have a show that is focused on girl main characters and is, you know, magical girl, and the way this show is, the male characters tend to be a little bit underdeveloped and very kind of one... And one of the things that when we jumped into this was we wanted to allow Drake to grow. And I don't know that that's like, I think there's only so much you can do in a 26 minute episode of a cartoon. And so it makes sense that we don't see Drake doing a lot of growing, because he's a secondary character. I'm not saying he's absent of growth in the show, but the book provided us a chance to dive into his growth as a person. And Koi made some really beautiful scenes of him having, of Drake having these moments of introspection and growth, and especially just Drake's interactions with other characters where he's realizing who he is. I'm really excited for people to get to read that, because I've seen the Barbie movie a lot right now in the comment about Ken being treated as an accessory to Barbie. I feel like that's something that we were able to give Drake an emotional core. or a different one. And I'm excited about that.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Lauren. I was just going to say, this reminds me of my brief time when I wrote the Buffy reboot as well over at Boom, because a big thing when I started, for any Buffy fans out there as well, I feel like there must be crossover. We love our magical girls. But there was, you know, Xander, who I think back on the table in the show was quite a problematic character. And so what I did in the series was I leaned into it. I made him as problematic, but also quite sympathetic and kind of pathetic as well. And I think, like, when you can bring humanity to a character like that, it just creates a whole new possibility of dimensions and stories. And that's what I like that we've done with Drake. We went the opposite. We could have made Drake also, like, the way I tried to write Xander in that series, is like a total double down loser who's just like a jerk to everybody he meets. But I can tell Drake's like a sweet, sweet boy. He's got a lot of feelings. And so I want to make sure, you know, he's able to feel those feelings. I love that we've been able to do that.
Yeah, I found that personally, like, super enjoyable as, you know, somebody who's enjoyed this character, who's been sort of mid-background. And then, you know, to see the other members of the pack show up was, like, also very fun. Josh and Max.
Right there on page one.
I know. I was blown away right out of my seat when I saw that. I was like, this isn't your mother's Jewel Riders.
Right. You know, I mean, I'll piggyback a little bit on what you were saying about the growth of the characters, and especially Lauren, when you were mentioning the Barbie movie, because I know that there were so many people out there and, you know, Jordy, to kind of chime in about, you know, the psychology of it all and the, you know, the somewhat toxic masculinity. It's like people that I know, I mean, it's funny because even in the queer community, like, there were people who didn't like the movie. And I was like, well, are you maybe just a little bit toxic masculine? Like, you know, why didn't you like it? Like, did you find it offensive or whatever? And meanwhile, you know, every time I watch it, I cry because I identify so heavily with, especially, like, the mom character and things like that. And so to see, you know, my personal favorites are the girls. Like, I mean, I always enjoy the female heroines. But, you know, it is nice to see the boys also taking a front seat.
And I think one of the other things that was really nice to me to see was an exploration of this sort of quartet of Merlin, Kale, Queen Anya, I guess Adriana now, and Jared. Which was something that it's like, you know, there's history there, right? When you watch the show, like, you know, it's there, but it was really nice to finally see that explored. It was amazing to see the queen as a Jewel Rider, even yeah, just that one flashback panel. I was like, oh my God, I love this.
Right. That was
fun. When Koi sent that image in that you're talking about, I showed it to all of my coworkers immediately. I was just over the moon. I was like, look at this. Cause we see Wintermane in the background of things all the time in the show. And I loved Wintermane as a kid. And so getting to see Wintermane, like, even in action a little bit was amazing to me. And getting to see this younger version of the queen, who obviously has so much in common with her daughter, it was magical for me to see that come together.
100%.
The Adriana stories. I want to have a whole spinoff.
I love it.
I would read it 100%.
Exactly. Oh, really? How shocking.
Yeah,
but I mean, that's the thing, is that I think that the comic is doing really well is giving the characters that maybe didn't have a lot of storyline or maybe had a lot of possibilities, it seems like you really took that opportunity and ran with it. And that's what I love about this. Awesome.
So, speaking of seeing Anya in her jewel armor, I wanted to ask
Adriana.
Cole, it'll be Anya coming out of her mouth forever, probably. What was it like to redesign Guinevere? Because we noticed that Fallon and Tamara remain largely the same jewel armor, but Guinevere has an interesting redesign for her jewel armor in this iteration, and we wanted to see what the thought process was behind that.
Koi, I'll lead you in. When I reached out to Koi about, hey, we're redesigning it, one of the ways that we approached it was looking at kind of each of the girls has something that's very signature about their outfits. For Fallon, I immediately think of her cape and her boots. And for Tamara, I think of the skirt. And so those were things that we wanted to maintain. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of approached it from, I sent Koi like a bunch of pins to kind of get started, like Pinterest things that were, well, what if we focus on the unique aspect of each outfit? And Koi brought in this incredible like level of magical girl to the redesigns. And I'd actually love to know more, Koi, about your process and figuring that out. All I know is that I sent you a bunch of pictures of boots.
Yes. What I thought of doing was I wanted to have them a little bit of a uniform look, but the personality would still show. And I think the why I chose to change a lot with Guinevere is because the old suit is too fancy.
Yes, she's too extra. You mean so, ruffles don't say adventure to you?
from what I know, she's a bit boyish, right? So I want to have that, but still not too boyish, but still have that fancy element to it. And the rest is maintained because I think it fits their character very well. So I didn't change much with the other two.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that, you know, the jacket that she wears in her sort of
jewel adventure
outfit is kind of echoed with the skirt, the peplum of the jacket.
And the star on the sleeves.
And yeah, like that. And that star iconography as well is on there, which I really like. And that's a tie back to Anya as well.
Oh my gosh! Sorry, I'm that was something that we did. I'm excited that you brought it up.
Aw. Aw, see, we got it. Yay. Yes. I think, you know, and this is going to be something that I'm sure you guys already had the conversation over, but again, to Chris's point, it's like when you're changing title characters, like, for instance, and this is something that we'll ask, it's like if the logo has maintained its similarity and Tamara and Fallon are the same, but then Guinevere, aka Starla, and the pack, and, you know, Merlin, they've kind of taken on a different look. It's like, especially being the fact that it was the title character, it's like, is there going to be the chance then that, you know, because the target audience is kind of like, well, we're opening this up to a newer audience. Like, it's not just about, you know, the people who loved it back in the day. It's like, I guess we'll just wait and see. Like, you know, what is social media going to say about the changes? You know, I think that that's just something that we'll have to wait and see. But personally, I loved especially Tamara. She's so cute, Koi. So I love your artwork for Tamara. Thank you for bringing her to life. I appreciate it.
I do want to say the response to the redesigns has already been so positive. I've been grabbing it and sending it to Koi whenever it comes up, whenever I spot it on Twitter. It just that people are delighted with the new look because Koi really made them Gwen's ruffles are very cool, but I'm glad that we made the moves that we did for a modern thing. The ruffles will always be iconic, but I think what we've done with Gwen is we've said that this is still the character you love, just a little newer. And Koi took that direction and just made some really stunning costumes.
Yeah, they turned out really lovely. I think they have a nice, sleek, somewhat updated modernization for it. I think that I liked that the helmets are a little sleeker. They actually they feel a little more helmet-like versus huge wings coming off the side of your
right,
head.
Right, right. And I will also, not just the compliments on Tamara, but, you know, Koi, we're going to talk a little bit more about this with the next set of questions, but I just want to put it out there. I love your villainous artwork. We're not even going to say who it is, because there's a bunch of options here, but I love the art, Koi. It's so beautiful. So beautiful. And I mean, you know, it just, it's almost like it fits in with that classic magical girl villainess, almost like a Disney villainess as well. Like mm-hmm. It's very echoing of like your classic, you know, Maleficent and Queen. And I love it. I love it. It's so pretty.
Yeah, that was definitely a spot we were going to like, definitely wanted to shine a spotlight on the coloring mm-hmm. for those pages, because those were incredible.
Right. So Sarah did an amazing job with the coloring. Yeah. And you did an amazing job with the artwork. Yeah.
So one of the things we did wanted to ask whether or not, so we were kind of bouncing back and forth between each other. We're like, well, where's the timeline? Where in the timeline does this story sit?
Is it a sequel?
Soft reboot?
Like, what is it? Is it a prequel? Like, is it just alternate universe? Is it retelling? What is it? So maybe you know.
I view it as being, so the girls are older mm-hmm. than they are in the show. So it's a little bit of a sequel, but I didn't, when we approached it, as much as I adore Jewel Quest part one and part two, I felt like jumping back in and telling that story again wasn't something I wanted to do. And so I didn't want to show anyone getting their jewels again. And so it's a little bit sequel, but we also wanted to make something where people that aren't familiar with the property would feel comfortable stepping in to this book. If this is your first introduction to the Jewel Riders, you will be fine. Like, you don't have to have watched both seasons. You should watch both seasons because it's very fun. Mm-hmm. But it's, I don't know whether to call it a sequel or a reboot. I'm not even going to attempt to combine the two words. I was like, it's going to sound very silly.
We're just like an interesting continuation, aren't we? I feel like we're just kind of picking up where a place maybe left off. I can't say at what time, but I feel like it has to be sometime after the biker sheep. It has to be, because there's like a lot of people who already know each other. Like you say, like there's even something, I hope you don't mind me saying, I guess, Lauren, but we did have like a bit of like, we're using, you know, Gilly's pearl. You know, there's like a lot of things that have sort of been introduced already, and we're kind of
like the biker sheep.
Huh?
I said like the biker sheep. Yes. Like Odian already knows everybody. We're past the Rainbow Bridge to Fairyland.
Yes. We've got flowers like made in our honor. Like that's what I mean. Like flower sculptures. I feel like that's like what it is. I feel like we're just like anywhere from the season, you could just pop off and then probably just start reading it. You know, it's a continuation of any kind of day, though with some pretty larger bad things happening. But overall, yeah, I feel it's a continuation.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was going
to Merlin, right?
Because what?
He was, I was like, okay, well, Merlin's there. So after the end of season two, and then I was like, piece of kale that is stone. So I'm like, okay, well, that feels definitely sequel.
Right. I mean, we don't want to give away too much here, but it's just like I think that there's just a callback to a lot of things. And that's why I was asking, because it's like, okay, are we meant to read this as though it's a sequel? Like, okay, keep in mind all the events of the animated series, season one and two, now read the comic. Or is it just like a new reader can pick up the story and not really have seen the show, which I think you're alluding to?
Yes, that's something that was, I feel like earlier on we talked about how this is a property where you have to show someone merchandise and then they'll remember it. And that's kind of hard to find that balance. So yeah, a new reader should be able to pick this up, and old readers will enjoy Easter eggs.
Right.
Like
exactly.
Old readers will know about the biker sheep mm-hmm. and they'll know about the Odian arc. Mm-hmm. And you know, for a new reader, these are just the coolest sheep you've ever seen.
Right. I mean, and we love it. And, you know, I don't know who's whose decision that was or if it was a collaboration, but who watched the show? It was like, we love Fairyland, especially the biker sheep that Fluffy, Stuffy, and Muffy need to make an appearance. Who was that?
You know that's Lauren all over. Lauren, hey, listen, I know you're like new to this whole world and everything, but there are these things called biker sheep. You might not have met them yet. You're gonna need to put those in for everybody. Okay. For me. And I was like, I was like, what are the words? I don't even know what these words mean yet. She's like, yes. Okay,
great. Trust me, when you see the biker sheep, you'll know that they're biker sheep.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I heard about them before even seeing them. And then when I saw them, I was like, yep, that's the biker sheep indeed. I love them. I think they're great. And I love that Odeon loves them so much as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just was wondering because I was like, okay, so now we know those are Jordy's marching assignments that, okay, you got to love the biker sheep. Go forth and create sheep.
I think Lauren, again, is very good about, I think, seeing the things that she remembers from her core memories of things that filled her heart with joy. And in a way, I feel like I'm a ghostwriter for some parts of Lauren's biggest fantasy, which is give me biker sheep and
sheep and Wintermane.
Right. <Yes. laughs> Exactly. And, you know, I'm assuming, you know, it's just an assumption, but it's like if we see callbacks to Fairyland and Biker Sheep and Odeon, I'm assuming, and you know, that there's going to be callbacks to other things as well, that other, you know, that fans of the show are going to thrill over those Easter eggs as well. Mm-hmm. Other lands.
And I'm trying to lean on myself now too. Lauren's been impressed. I've thrown a few at her now, and then she writes me back like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, yeah, I'm learning. I'm making you happy before you've asked for the thing. I've got this.
And so, Lauren, are you also the one who loves sunglasses?
Yes.
I was like, there's so many sunglasses in this. Even King Jared needs some. And I was like, I hope we get our line of Jewel Rider sunglasses coming out soon.
Well, and also just the way Coy draws the sunglasses. Like, when I saw the biker sheep, I was delighted. They are such an incredibly minor thing in one episode, but they left such an imprint on my brain, kind of the same way that the Squirtle Squad in Pokemon did. Yeah. Where if you just put a little guy in sunglasses, I think it's great. Yeah. That's amazing.
You know, this is one more reason we're connected, Lauren, because I need to show you a picture of my D&D character. I called her Truffles, and she was a small troll. No, God, sorry. But, no. And she had this big, beautiful green hair, and everyone called her Broccoli Head, which used to make my character very annoyed. It was very upsetting. But I gave her a pair of shades because she had her disguise kit, and then I never took the shades off, but I put on Bulbasaur shades on my little picture, and it just used to drive everyone crazy in the middle of a battle. And they'd just be like, I can't take this seriously, looking at right now. And I'm just like, deal with it. I can't help that Truffles is awesome and has the best pair of sunglasses known to man. Lauren, I'm going to get you a pair as our completion project gift.
Oh my God, that's going to be so exciting.
Will you wear them?
I will.
See what a little accessorizing does? It just makes you just that much more fabulous. I love it. You know, there was something, I don't know if we really answered earlier, but since we were kind of talking about callbacks, the logo, it's basically the same exact logo. Has that been redrawn, or was that something that you guys lifted out of the style guide and just basically used the line work?
Our design team did shine it up a little bit. There are very, very subtle changes to it. The logo is iconic, mm-hmm. and we didn't want to change it too much. And you'll note that in King Arthur as well, the logo is functionally the same. It was important that we keep it as close to the same as possible because I want fans to know that as a team, we're approaching it with respect and with love, that we care about this property. And I think that the logo is one way to show that.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
It is beautiful, isn't it? I love it. I love it.
You so look great. Like, just put that so succinctly and so wonderfully. I love that.
That's why Lauren's Lauren. We love her for that.
Jordy, I wanted to ask you also, when you were writing the characters, what was important to you to get across about each of the main characters?
I think that life is hard. I think life is hard, Chris. I think, even in these like happy realms where everything's good, you know, like, I feel like there's like a certain, gosh, I'm trying to think of how to put this lightly. It's like, I just feel like, you know, when we're all kids and we all grow up and we all watched all these things that just made everything seem like it was all rainbow and sunshine. And that's beautiful. And I think that escapism in a fantasy is important. But I think sometimes, like we've said, it kind of like gives you such a tight constraint to tell stories. And you can't always actually like open up to people's real feelings and motivations and thoughts. And I'm really fascinated by that. So I think that's the main crux of what I'm trying to do, is even understand the characters better myself. So I want to continue to explore their emotional thoughts and sort of like what makes them happy and what makes them sad, and giving them some autonomy and giving them some like courage and helping them find respect. Like I'm excited by all of that, because given they all are friends, don't get me wrong, it's a beautiful place of friendship, everything is really honky-dory, but we all know that there's no such thing as like constant perfection, right? Like you can't live like that. There's going to be a crack. So there's definitely things going on underneath these like perfect, you know, surfaces. And I think that's what makes me so excited to talk about that. And yeah, being a kid is hard too. They're all quite young. So we're also getting into that. I wrote it. It's silly that I say I like it, but I like the idea of Drake being insecure, that people are talking about him. It's like things like that, things that I think we all go through when we're young. So yeah, I'm trying to explore that.
I do want to say that, like, in the original show, there are so many things that are said as a single line, and then we never hear about them again.
And the Horn of Merlin.
Well, I think specifically of there, and I've had this conversation with Jordy, I want to say, like, once a month for the last year, it's the same line every time, which is Fallon going, I never talk to my parents.
And you know that's dug deep in me already in my soul. And like, Lorna got so many things.
But why? And then her parents show up later in the episode, and the whole I never talk to you thing is not, it doesn't come up again. I'm like, that's such a bold statement.
Mm-hmm. And that's a clean cut way, I think, of doing it as kids, right? Like you kind of acknowledge it, but you don't acknowledge it. And I guess that's what I'm grateful for with the licensor and with Lauren. We're going into it. We're trying to go as deep as we can within the means that we have as well. But like, I'm very excited if we can continue telling these stories. Like, I think they'll be so rounded. They're gonna have a lot of depth, I would like to think.
You know, and
entertainment has been nothing but supportive about this since day one. And I just want to shout them out about it. They have been such an absolute dream to work with and have been open to all of the ideas that the team has had. They have been cheering Koi's artwork and Sarah's colors since day one. And it's really just been such an absolute dream to work on.
You know, I was going to say, when you're talking about the fact of like, okay, like that was such an important storyline, or that was such a, you know, interesting thing to talk about. It's funny because I think that in many ways, that's one of the reasons why The Jewel Writers as a story, you know, really captivated our imagination and continues to do to this day. It's because when you do watch it, you pick up on things. And it's almost like, you know, a Disney movie where you can watch it as a child and love it for what it is. And as you grow older, you're like, but wait a minute, I see something in it that I didn't get when I was younger, or I picked up on this now, or this is a little bit heavier of a subject. And I think that that's exactly what makes a great property wonderful, is because, you know, there are so many stories that you can tell. And it's like, if I can use Disney as an example, it's like we can love a movie that was made, you know, 50 years ago, and yet fans, new authors can expand on those storylines. And that's exactly what's happening right now with Jewel Writers, with this creative team, is that you've taken the core kernel of like, okay, but you mentioned this in a 22-minute episode, but now we're expanding on it. And I love that. I really do.
I'm very excited about, and I have to say again, just to like speak to Koi and Sarah and Chaz, who I just realized I've not mentioned once here, and I'm so sorry for that, our letterer on the project as well, is that there is like a level of sophistication that I really think Koi and Sarah have brought to the look of it. Like even with their covers, I've left some of them on my desktop so I can always look at them and kind of remember, A, how lucky I am to work with two really wonderfully talented, very humble artists, and also just like, dang, look at how good this looks. Like it just gets me like pumped to like write and to think about it and sit on it, because it has such a sophisticated new look that I think it's going to engage with the story in such a lovely way as well. I think it's just a really good marriage. I know Lauren keeps kind of talking about this team and the dream, but I really do feel like everyone's kind of running on the cylinders and all cylinders. And I'm excited to get this package out there. When's it come out, Lauren? May? When's it out?
May, in May. let me check the exact date, but it comes out in May, and it's just been So cool. The release date is May 28th.
Yes.
And I do want to thank y'all for encouraging people to pre-order it.
Thank you.
It's such a special project to all of us, to the entire team. So Chaz was not familiar with this property originally. And when he dove into it, he made these really beautiful little symbols for when captions when you can't tell who's talking, he put these beautiful little symbols on it. That's everyone's jewel.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's such a nice touch. And he really, you can tell he put his whole heart into it, and it's wonderful.
These are the little things you can do with the comic as well, right? That expand it and like give you a new visual, like splendor. I wonder if Jewel Riders, obviously as a TV show, great marketing, great, could be in so many things. I love in an animation, again, a full film would also be great. But I think for a comic, it's really good medium for the story with everything going on. We can do so much. Poor Koi. I'm so sorry, Koi. You're going to be drawing so many things.
so many horses. You know, and talking about the comic. Oh, go ahead, Koi. Go ahead.
I'm enjoying my time drawing everything.
I love that. Let me know what I can ask you to draw more of, Koi. What can I write in the script more for you? Oh, also,
we're going to put in a request for more animal reaction faces.
Yes!
Continue the, oh my God, when there's one caption where Sunstar just goes, I almost died. Oh my gosh.
I've been using, there's a picture of Archie where he's like rolling his eyes, and I have it saved on my desktop. I love it so much.
Koi's oh my gosh.
Very good. When I first got some of those first pages back, I was like, oh, Koi can do comedy. That's really good. He can do really good pacing. He makes me look funny. So now I'm trying to write funnier scenes, but Koi's really funny. He does it on his own. So good.
Yeah, the reaction shots. And just, you mentioned Archie. We're just going to say we love Archie. I mean, I think you guys have already fallen in love with Archie as well. So we love it. It's fantastic. We did have a couple of quick questions about the comic itself. We don't want to give away any spoilers, so if you can't talk on it, we won't. But just a couple of quick questions that we're going to throw out here before we finish up.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So we wanted to know, so it looks like the forest stone has been redesigned to be like a diamond shape. And they've obviously lost the wolf helmets. But was King Jared still part of the pack at one point with his wolf?
Yes, that was it. One of the things that I liked in the show was that this was something that both of her parents did. I liked the connection that Jared has because he's still technically, he commands them. Like that's true in the show. These are his boys,
right.
and they're wolves. This is his like squad. I think there's not a lot of images of his forest stone specifically. And so we worked a little bit to try and find a kind of like a happy medium shape. Yes, did that answer your question about the shape of the forest stone?
Yeah, well, so the forest stone, well, in general, like, I mean, even Drake and like the other wolf riders, like, does the pack still have a forest stone or is it more of a diamond now or where the other jewels look like they look in the series? Does that make sense?
Hang on, can you ask that one more time?
Sure. Right. when we were looking at the artwork, I mean, the forest stone itself looks like, you know, like a little jewel of a tree. And the heart is a heart and the moon is a moon, sun is a sun. Where the three enchanted jewels look the same, but the forest stone, at least in the artwork, looks more like a diamond. Not so just on Jared.
Uh-huh. Yeah, when I was looking at all of the different pictures of the forest stone on the Jewel Riders Wiki, some of them are a little bit rhombus-y and some of them are tree-shaped. And then you have Jared's, which is a diamond. And we kind of felt like unifying it would be good. And I, not having the wolf helmets is, you know, the boys are cute.
Don't hide their faces.
We gotta give people what they want. They want to see these cute faces. That's how we get the comedy, though. That's how we get the reactions as well.
Now, in this, has Drake already given up his forest stone? Because we never did see him. We never see him transform in the comic.
I don't know that I can really answer that without being spoilery about the actual plot of the book.
Okay.
under wraps.
Well,
I know you're trying to. I know you're trying to not do spoilers, but right. I can't think of how I would word that. And Jordy, do you, Jordy and Coy, do you know how you would word that without?
I don't want to give anything away. I'm just like,
okay, that's fine. That's fine.
No, you know, we're going to file this for a volume 2 conversation.
And, you know, since we're talking about Drake, I will just say it looks like there, to me, it looks like there's a love blossoming. Because it's funny, in the animated series, when Chris and I watched it, it was always kind of apparent that, like, okay, you know, Guinevere and Drake are paired off in season 1. But then in season 2, when she goes off with Ian, it's like, it's obvious that, like, you know, this is supposed to be her Prince Charming. This is, you know, the Beast Prince or whatever. And I know there's a lot of fans out there. They're totally team Ian. And then a lot of them are like, no, you're like, you know, Drake and Guinevere were meant to be. But Chris and I, in our fandom, we always paired the ship of Tamara and Drake. So that was just like our little invention back in 1995. But maybe that was just hoping because it was our two favorites.
I think that Drake is very flirty as a character, especially in the show. Like, he is.
Yes.
And so it's always going to, he's very good at, like, making the other characters feel, like, special and important when he's talking to them. And I was always a Drake kid, I'm going to be honest. I understand, I get the Ian love. He just was not my favorite. But what with this story in particular, one of the things that we're talking about is Gwen's future. And the mirror of who her parents are is Gwen and Drake. And that's something that we're playing with in the story.
We sure are. Let's just say me and Lauren have had many a chat about the love triangles and, you know.
Gotcha. We'll have to tune into the Days of Our Lives Avalon.
Indeed.
Coy, we were noticing in your art, we were wondering if you did the back cover design, because it's a very interesting redesign of the characters. Uh-huh. And we were curious if that was your art as well.
The back cover is by a different artist named Natalie Nardoza, who is a fan of the original show. And
very fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, we did the same thing with King Arthur, actually. There's the back of King Arthur has art done by a different artist who was a fan of the original show. Koi's cover on the front, because Koi did all of, you know,
right,
he did the redesigns, but those designs on the back are based on Koi's character designs.
I gotcha. We were just a little like, this doesn't look like the same art, but then we weren't sure if it was like, is this supposed to be a throwback, so that if you do see the new artwork and then you see the back cover, you're like, oh yeah, this artwork looks more familiar. Like, I recognize it, you know. It's my sleeping bag. I put 2 and 2 together.
It's my sleeping bag.
Coy, we did also want to just say how much we liked the redesign of Kale's dweezels. They're very menacing looking in this. And I just wanted to pay some compliments to that, because we really, you know, they go from, you know, doing drag with sheep to
which these, we love.
Yes, to these really, you know, sort of menacing designs. And
right. What, like, was that your idea, or was it something that was kind of like, no, we need to make these less of a, you know, comic-y sidekick character to more menacing?
I want to make them not too funny, but still retain the shape that's not too serious.
I think when you drew one sitting on the other's shoulders to have a conversation, I think that really does speak to the fact that you know, they're scary, but there's still a little goofy guy energy in there.
Yeah, yes. Right.
There's a little ferret energy sort of going through these characters.
Ferret. Like it.
Yeah. And the last thing that we were looking at was really the Merlin. I feel like of everyone, like, yes, you know, the title character, Guinevere, Starla, whatever you knew her as, really, you know, has transformed, you know, visually and even, like, story-wise. Like, I think that she's a very different character. Like, there's the core character in there, but she she has evolved. And I think that that has everything to do with the writing, with the era that we're writing in and everything. But Merlin as well, like he really went from kind of like this, like all knowing, just very happy, cheerful, you know, character to almost like a, he's sassy. Like he definitely has a bite to him. And that was one thing that we saw in the comic. And I was like, the redesign of him, like the redesign of his character. It's like he has, I don't even know, like just a bite to him. But like, you know, there were some things that was like, oh, he's just a cranky old man. Like he reminds me a lot of like the Merlin from the Sword and the Stone, the Disney movie as well.
When he left that note at the end, I was like, blow me to Bermuda.
Right. So it's like, what was the, we'll end with this, but like, you know, I think that that was another of the big changes. Like, was that intentional to be like, no, we need to really update Merlin for today?
Lauren?
I wasn't sure who was starting. When I found myself in a unique position when we started working on this, where I was working with two books featuring Merlin, because I was working on this and King Arthur at the same time. Yes. And it was so funny to see how different the Merlins were as I was, you know, in the Jewel Riders case, rewatching Jewel Riders, but also seeing King Arthur and the Knights of Justice for the first time. They're very different Merlins. Mm. And the Merlin in Jewel Riders, he's helpful, but I, you know, to stay spoiler free, he is going through it in this book. And I feel like even if you are an immortal, all powerful magic user, like you're going to have something that gets under your skin eventually.
It's almost like you've got to deal with all those underlying emotions, eh? Just like take a minute, do some introspection with everyone else in the room.
You got to just take a good bath, light a scented candle.
I was so excited to have bath time. Lauren said she loved that. I was very grateful.
it was such a change. I mean, again, it's like that's just the comic and that's where it takes it. But like, I don't think that we ever would have gone into Merlin's bathroom in 1995 and seen him wrapped in a towel, let alone Tamara walking in on him.
Can I say to you, that comes from history in my own family, that towel. I have my lovely father-in-law. I adore him. And he was on holiday and his his wife told me this hilarious story that when they were coming out of these like spa houses, all these like men come out and it's like it's nude bathhouse and all these like men are walking around in the buff. And then my father-in-law comes out with his towel wrapped around at the top. And she said she just saw him and it's like, what a sweet man. And so I had that image. So I was like, I'm going to make Merlin do that. I think Merlin's like a sweet, I think he'd tie the rope at the top, you know, I think, or not the rope, the towel. I think he's a modest man.
Right. Well, I'm glad he had a towel handy. I mean, truly, you know, for modesty's sake and Tamara's behalf.
Yes.
I think one thing that Coy did well is he, the Merlin that we see in the show, the Merlin that Coy made is, he's older. I feel like I know that Merlin is already old, but he seems
hundreds of years old.
This, yes. He seems more targeted to the audience that this Jewel Riders is for. And you can feel him being, you know, kind of a teacher figure. Like he looks, I almost said respectable, and I feel like that's such a strange word to use, but he looks like a smart wizard. And not that the original design didn't look like a smart wizard,
right,
but there's
right. I mean, there's he looks a, like a cartoon wizard in 1995.
Right.
I love
how you said that the Merlin is almost like the target of the older generation. And so it's like, it's reading this, it's like, this is your life. You went from being the young kid who watched this to now you're the old man who takes the bath and has a messy house and has a sassy owl for a friend. You know, that's you now.
Sassy owl for a friend, though.
All of the Archie and Merlin exchanges were delightful. Like, I think we love Archie and we love our currently unnamed lady villain, unrevealed lady villain. It's a major thing with us all. We're like, these are the guys. These are great characters.
Mm-hmm. And we are so excited. So thank you so much for all of you and your time and for sharing your stories. And hopefully we didn't give away anything that was too much of a spoiler. But let's go ahead and go around the room. And, you know, for anyone who's interested in following you on social media or learning about upcoming projects, obviously Jewel Writers, but anything else, we'll go around the room. We'll start off with Lauren, if you want to let our listeners know.
Yeah, so you can follow me on the site formerly known as Twitter. My handle is HitesUsenLauren, HitesUsenLauren. And if you want to learn more about upcoming Maverick books, the account to follow for that is Maverick_OGN.
Wonderful. Thank you. And Jordy?
Hello, I am on no social media platforms because I am terrified of the internet. But you can find me in my books. I color a lot. A lot of them are very gory and very depressing and dark. But the ones I write are really cute and nice. So I would just stay focused on the Jewel Writers part of it and get that out in the end of May. Oh, and I was also going to say earlier, after hearing about a lady villain in Archie, I was going to say I'm very inspired now to make a lady villain in Archie best friend. So let's just keep that on the back burner
now. Oh, we're excited.
Yes.
And Koi.
You can follow me on Instagram at TheKoiFish.
Wonderful. Thank you. And Lauren, as a reminder to all of our readers, right now I know that they can pre-order. When this podcast is being released, it's going to be closer to the actual release date. But right now Amazon has it for pre-order. I'm sure other online e-commerce locations as well.
Yeah, if you go to the page on the Mad Cave Studios website for the book, there is a link to purchase it through Lunar, which is for comic book store distribution, and Barnes & Noble, and a direct link to Simon & Schuster, as well as pre-ordering it through our website.
Awesome. Thank you for that information. We'll be sure to share that in the links for the podcast so fans can get their hands ASAP on some great Jewel Writers story. Thank you, everyone, again, for listening to this episode of the Jewel Writers Archive podcast. You can find all of our work at www.jewelwritersarchive.com or on any social media at Jewel Writers or at Jewel Writers Archive. And if you have any questions, please reach out to us. And we hope you follow and enjoy the creators we've featured here today. And as we like to end every episode, we like to say, friends together.
Friends forever.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much. I hope everyone has a magical day. Thank you.
Thank you.